It is Thursday, November 29th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Thomas. The Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter will hold its Fresh Start art auction this evening from 6:30 to 9:30 at Serendipity in downtown Rogers. This fundraiser will feature works from professional artists as well as from the shelter's art program. More information can be found at nwaws.org. Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, and it's Holiday Appreciation Day for U of A faculty and staff. It's next Tuesday, December 4th. Razorback apparel, gifts, and more will be offered. Store locations include the Garland Avenue Bookstore, the U of A Student Union, Northwest Arkansas Mall, and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. Visit uofastore.com for more information.
Ahead on Ozarks, what the long-anticipated flyover means for motorists in Northwest Arkansas, how ska music can help reduce the population of homeless pets in the region, and why a summer reading assignment inspired students at Haas Hall Academy.
But first, between 70 and 120 new jobs are expected to come to the Fort Smith area as Major Firearms Company plans to locate its U.S. operations at Chaffee Crossing. According to the Arkansas Economic Development Council, Walther Arms Incorporated announced the move earlier this morning. Walther Arms will share the Umarex USA campus at Chaffee Crossing, investing more than $7 million over the next 5 years. And manufacturing capabilities in the plant will include components for both air guns and firearms. In addition, the campus will be home to the North American corporate headquarters for both companies. According to the press release, the German-based PW Group, which owns both Walther Arms and Umarex USA, is expected to relocate manufacture of certain products from abroad to the Fort Smith production facility. According to TalkBusiness.net, Governor Mike Beebe says that Fort Smith's excellent workforce helped convince Umarex and Walther to increase production here.
Senior members of Arkansas's congressional delegation are beginning to receive some pushback from constituents who are concerned about lack of cooperation in Washington. Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor says the nation's growing fiscal problems will not be solved until entitlements are restructured and reforms made to the tax code. Senator Pryor says he supports certain aspects of the Simpson-Bowles framework to reduce the debt.
Some groups maybe don't like specific aspects of Simpson-Bowles. I think most of what Simpson-Bowles is a framework. They didn't take too many hard positions. For example, they said that we ought to consider cutting money for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is PBS and NPR. Well, I don't support that. But still, they said it, and we ought to look at it, and we, you know, ought to see what the numbers are and see how much that moves the needle.
Meanwhile, Senator John Bozeman says Arkansans are tired of indecision on Capitol Hill when it comes to negotiations over avoiding the fiscal cliff.
I think the biggest thing that I hear from our business community is that they want to know what the rules are going to be. Right now, they don't know what their taxes are going to be in the future. They're concerned about their health care costs. And as a result, because of all the uncertainty, it really has frozen the business community. And these are the people that have the ability to hire people and to improve the economy.
Senator Bozeman says he doesn't think it is a good idea to raise taxes during a weak economy. The senator says he thinks there should be more of a focus on spending cuts and eliminating tax loopholes for companies making a lot of money.
Tonight, students at Fayetteville High School will begin their annual homeless vigil. Alan Wilburn, communications director for the Fayetteville School District, says that the annual event helps raise food and money for families in the school district that most need assistance through the school's Families in Transition program.
The federal definition of homeless is an unstable living situation, not necessarily that you don't have a structure in which to live. For example, 12 people in a two-bedroom apartment, that's considered an unstable situation. We've already served it's approaching 275 students this year through that program. Sometimes it's food, sometimes it's clothing, sometimes it's helping them get a new housing arrangement someplace. Just trying to remove all the hurdles that are hindering that child from learning in the classroom.
Another program the district offers is called the Outback, which provides basic food and clothing items to families who couldn't otherwise afford them. Wilburn says that offerings such as the Families in Transition and Outback programs help to raise awareness of the area's homeless population.
With all of the tremendous growth in Northwest Arkansas over the last 20 to 30 years, people in other parts of the state think that everyone in Northwest Arkansas drives a BMW or Mercedes and all the streets are paved with titanium, but that's just not the case. We have a number of students that their families are in trouble, and that number grows each year. And yes, we've gotten much better at identifying those students now, and they're not as hesitant to come out. They don't stay in the shadows like they used to.
As for this year's homeless vigil, students are aiming to raise $10,000 for the Families in Transition program. Wilburn says that the students will brave the elements until their goal is met.
An estimated 350 jobs will reportedly be created once a $60 million expansion is complete at Bordertown Casino in Pocola, Oklahoma, barely more than a stone's throw across from the state line from Fort Smith. According to a report in thecitywire.com, more than 62,000 square foot casino expansion that is phase one of the project will celebrate its grand opening Saturday. The casino expansion required an additional 52 employees. However, when phase two of the project is complete, about 300 jobs will be added to the staff at the seven-floor, 11,400-square-foot hotel and restaurant. The Pocola Casino is one of eight owned by the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma.
Newly released figures by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics show that unemployment in the area ticked up for the month of October. In Northwest Arkansas, the jobless rate rose to 5% during October, representing an increase of 0.1%. That means that about 11,900 people in Benton and Washington counties are jobless and actively looking for work. During the same month-to-month period, the labor force shrank by about 600 people. In the Fort Smith area, the jobless rate increased by 0.3%, leaving 7.9% of the labor force unemployed. The overall labor force in the River Valley decreased by about 1,700 people. According to the statistics, the jobless rate in both areas is lower than it was in October 2011, and Northwest Arkansas's labor force is about 5,200 people stronger than it was a year ago. Overall, the labor force in Fort Smith shrank by about 1,800 people over the year. Overall, the unemployment rate for all of Arkansas is at 6.6%.
And earlier this week, the Applied Sustainability Center at the University of Arkansas received a grant from the Arkansas Community Foundation. The grant, awarded through the Foundation's Sustainable Energy Initiative, will help the Applied Sustainability Center with a program that will help cities become more energy efficient and employ renewable energy policies. According to the university, the energy efficiency program will consist of four elements, including municipal energy scorecards, a summer institute for municipal leaders, monthly energy roundtable calls, and energy education for city residents. Four or five cities will be recruited to take part in the 2013 pilot program, and up to 10 cities are expected to be included in an expanded program in 2014.
Expect partly cloudy skies tonight with lows in the lower 40s. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny skies with highs in the 60s. Tomorrow evening, clear and lows around 50. As we were discussing earlier, it's pretty spring-like.
Doesn't feel like late November, does
nope.
it?
Mm-mm. Ground will be broken early this new year on a much-anticipated Northwest Arkansas highway project. It's known as the Fayetteville Flyover. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us there in her truck.
I'm heading north on College Avenue, and I'm wanting to catch I-540. And if you've ever tried to do that, you know what a hassle it is. Because you have to turn onto Joyce, or pretend you're turning onto Joyce Boulevard in the mall area, and wait in line in the left-hand turning lane. Sometimes you have to go through several stoplight changes and then take a quick U-ey, boot it, and get into the right-hand lane and merge onto Fulbright Expressway to catch I-540. The alternative, if you're driving from Midtown Fayetteville, is to head west to link up with I-540 off of North Street, or head north up Gregg or Garland. All options are heavily trafficked, but the good news is that very soon you will be able to fly over all this mess. Chris Brown is Fayetteville City Engineer.
What you will be doing in order to use the flyover as you're coming down College Avenue, just after you pass the Millsap intersection, you'll be able to enter a ramp, and it'll come off the left side of the road, so it'll kind of be a left exit. Fly up and over the southbound 71B traffic and all of the Fulbright Expressway traffic, and then you'll then be able to enter onto the Fulbright Expressway westbound.
And there's more good news. The flyover will also provide an exit onto the Steel Street Crossing SMN Business Park north of the Medical District and just south of the Northwest Arkansas Mall.
Just south of the Olive Garden. Obviously, there has been a lot of development occurring around the Fulbright Expressway. Over the years, there have been some very large commercial developments. The medical park, as you said, and of course, Washington Regional came in, and that has generated additional development around that. So the big box stores that have came in out there, they draw traffic, which also draws additional development. So we certainly have seen that area grow as an economic driver for the city. It's a large tax base for us. The problem with the Fulbright Expressway is it's a controlled access facility, so there aren't many access points. And that's really been the weakness of that area, is just getting into that shopping area and into to the mall area has been a little bit difficult because of the controlled access facility.
As population grows in Northwest Arkansas, so does traffic, which Chris Brown says is expected to double by 2025.
And so we do continue to see traffic grow. Now, one thing about the traffic is the Joyce Boulevard intersection and College Avenue intersection is pretty much maxed out. It just can't really handle any more traffic. So to see any growth there, it's really not possible just because you can't push any more traffic through that intersection than we have now. And the flyover actually will help that intersection probably more than anything else. Of course, the flyover will parallel College Avenue, Highway 71B, and it'll be as much as 10 feet higher than College Avenue as it turns and goes turns into the bridge and goes to the west. We will have to be probably 18 feet or so over the top of all the roadways that we cross. So we're 18 to 20 feet in the air in many cases.
Project's part of the Spring 2007 Fayetteville Expressway Economic Development Corridor, designed to improve accessibility to districts adjacent to the Fulbright Expressway, Interstate 540, and College Avenue from Millsap Street to Zion Road. This $7 million flyover project is being funded by both the Fed and the state.
So the construction funding and the funding for the entire project is paid for by the federal aid funding that we received, and that was actually received back in 2005 in the transportation bill in 2005. It was an earmark, so it was allocated to this specific project. And then it's an 80-20 match, so it's 80% federal aid funding. And then the 20% that the city has to provide comes from our transportation bond fund, which again was approved in 2006. The total cost and the total cost of the flyover is about $7.7 million. So it's about $5.2 million of federal funding, and then the remainder of city transportation bond funds.
No eminent domain declarations were necessary for securing property to build the flyover, with property easements adjacent to existing public highways. Plus, the design and engineering phase is complete. On Tuesday, November 20th, the Fayetteville City Council approved a $6.3 million construction contract with Emery Sapp and Sons of Columbia, Missouri.
Once all the approvals are in, the paperwork is done, we'll be ready to go to construction. So early 2013 is when we expect construction to begin.
And Chris Brown warns that drivers will need to be patient during the construction phase.
And we will have lane closures on Highway 71B North as we're building the ramp. We also will have to close lanes on the Fulbright Expressway to make the tie-in to the expressway. The bridge, of course, will be constructed over the top of roadways that have traffic on them. So we will have to completely close those roadways as we're setting the steel for the bridge. That will be done during the overnight hours, and they'll be allowed to close only for a short period of time, maybe 30 minutes at a time, to set each piece of steel, and then traffic will continue to flow. So there will be traffic disruptions. It will mostly be lane closures, and obviously there will be traffic backups, and there will be some pain that people experience related to that. But in the end, it will be worth it, we believe.
And what about alternative routes to avoid construction delays?
We will work with the contractor on that, and we'll put out press releases and send out information at certain times. There are certain critical times that we would ask the public to find alternate routes, but generally they'll be able to work through with the existing traffic.
And one more thing, easing eastbound Fulbright traffic into the regional hospital district is a brand new $2.6 million roundabout.
Well, the roundabout, I mean, basically a roundabout is a circular intersection. So as you enter the intersection, you will see a circle. You will enter, always make a turn to the right and go around in a counterclockwise direction, and then you'll exit off to whatever leg of the street that you're going to. Roundabouts have been proven to be much safer and also much more efficient than other types of intersections. So the four-way stop that's there that the roundabout is replacing, we do see some traffic backups, especially when you have multi-lane four-way stops like that one is. People really, there are just too many cars to try to keep track of, and the roundabout really will reduce the number of things that drivers have to look at and make decisions about. So it allows traffic to move much more smoothly. You don't have to stop at a roundabout as you come to it. You do have to yield to traffic that's in the roundabout. But we've run the traffic models, and all the models that show will make that a much more efficient intersection.
Plus, roundabouts save drivers money because they burn less fuel from engine idling and tend to be more attractive with landscaped islands to circle about. The Fayetteville flyover is an 18-month construction contract, so will be completed by mid-2014. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This year marks the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, December 7th, 2012, marking the 150th anniversary of the battle at Prairie Grove. Dr. Gregory Benton is the Outdoor Recreation Specialist in the Recreation and Sport Management Program at the University of Arkansas. Heritage interpretation is one of his academic specialty areas. Over the past year, he has been conducting research as to why people participate in historical reenactments. I spoke with Dr. Benton earlier this week. He began our conversation by explaining the different roles involved in such events.
Reenactors are the people who actually portray events, and then living history practitioners are the people that dress up and portray a way of life, not at a specific event. So both will be on hand. Every 2 years, Prairie Grove celebrates the battle, and so on the even years, they will actually stage the battle on the first Saturday and Sunday of December. And so this year, it's December 1st and 2nd.
So in addition to actually reenacting the battle, there are also participants there that are cooking and camping.
Yes.
And
they have, civilian camps are a big part of what the public are allowed to tour before the battles themselves. And, of course, it's cooking, medical, spinners. There are all sorts of male and female living history participants that are showing that way of life. And then the spectators stand behind safety lines during the battles themselves. And so visitors get to speak with reenactors and living history participants in the camps where they'll be cooking. They'll have accoutrements, all of the canteens and special swords and horses and rifles. And it's a wonderful trip back into time. It's quite accurate, and that's an important thing to the reenactors. To them, it's a very serious hobby, and there's no organization or oversight, really. They're sort of loosely connected because of this passion for a leisure. You know, it's in their free time. And so,
you interviewed reenactors to kind of to find out why they do this, why they're so passionate about it, correct?
These are reenactors events that are going to be in dress, of course, for the battle. And so I interviewed a dozen of them before the battle, of course, because they're going to be very busy down on Saturday and Sunday. And I asked them, you know, why essentially they're doing a public service. They are acting as interpreters. They're educating people, portraying history, and yet they're not in uniform. They're not employed by the park. They often spend a lot of their own time and money. It's an expensive hobby. And so I interviewed them to ask them how they first got into reenacting and, you know, what makes them tick. And
well, you said that they are interpreters. And so what do you mean by that? They just are they're interpreting these historical moments for the public?
Well, at most parks and protected areas, zoos, aquariums, you have people known as guides, docents, They interpret heritage, which is everything that we've inherited, human culture and natural culture and human history. And so a lot of parks, there'll be a uniformed or a volunteer park ranger who gives interpretive programs. But with these reenactments, it's basically the public interpreting to the public. These are people that have taken upon themselves to study first-hand sources, journals, diaries, action reports of the soldiers to learn what they've learned. And they are portraying this to visitors the same way an interpreter would, but it's at this grand-scale event. And it's one-on-one in the camps, and so there's a lot of neat one-on-one interaction that the public will get to.
So what did you find in talking to these participants?
I found some really interesting sort of themes, as I call them, for their some of these people certainly were, they are, if they're from the South, that they had members of their family were in the Civil War. So I found some of that, and many of them checked their genealogy and their family history to find out, you know, some of them had both sides, had family members in both sides of the war. Some people were actually looking for a hobby. They were looking for something social to do with somebody and didn't necessarily have Civil War background in their family. A couple of these reenactors had gone to a mall and seen, like, at a recruiting office, somebody dressed up and got involved that way. Had a husband and wife who both loved horses and ended up both reenacting in the cavalry. And there were some ladies that dressed as men in order to be able to fight because they weren't allowed in battle. So there were several different reasons for people getting into this. Some of it, there was a theme of, you know, people especially from the South that got one version of American history in public schools share a different version of history that they have learned from reading first accounts of the war. Many of these reenactors do dress up on both sides. And we find that in the North as well, that it's to some people who won or lost is very important, but to others, it's a hobby and you want to make it as real as possible.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, I mean, it was a battle. So there were people from the North and the South. I mean, to make it realistic.
Another thing I found about this group of people is that this is a regional event, the Prairie Grove Battle. It's not very well known in the major history of the Civil War, other than the fact that it was sort of the last time that the Confederates threatened Kansas and Missouri and northwest Arkansas. But many of these reenactors go to national events as well. And so that there's actually a little bit of a pattern of some of these smaller events offering reenactors more of an opportunity to interact with the public. So I asked, you know, each one of these are a series of questions. And so I sort of explored whether they liked the regional battles more or the national events. And almost all of them had advantages to both. This is going to be a large showing, you know, with it being the sesquicentennial at Prairie Grove. So we're expecting something around a couple thousand reenactors, perhaps.
That many reenactors?
Yeah. Normally there's 500 to 750, and some of this I read from the park website, but they're expecting over 1,000 reenactors.
How do they organize that?
Well, Holly Hauser spends about a year on the off years organizing the several units. I mean, you've got Union and Confederate groups, cavalry and artillery and infantry, and so it takes a long time to put on a lot of organization. And also there's lots of children that, you know, under 16, you can't fire a weapon until you're 16 years old at a reenactment in Arkansas. So there are a few rules like that, but there will be young people as well in dress and portraying that way of life. And
so I wanted to ask that, if there was an age range, you know, if there were, if more of these, of the people participating were older, but you just said that there's 16-year-olds participating.
Well,
did you have a chance to talk to teenagers at all?
Well, I did ask all the reenactors about recruiting. One of the last questions I asked them, is there a danger of this hobby? And I mean, the average Confederate soldier was under the age of 20, and the average age of most reenactors are in the mid-40s, and it is sort of a male-dominated hobby. But I asked them whether they make a purpose of recruiting, and essentially when they are at events and they're interacting with the public, if they meet somebody who seems interested, then they sort of explain they have a packet of what's required, but they don't aggressively try to recruit. I mean, it is a hobby, but there are various ways of people getting interested in it, and it is a fascinating, you know, if you like the outdoors and want a glimpse into a simpler way of life. I mean, the values were so different back then, and many of these reenactors do take these programs into the schools, and it's just young people are amazed at how different, it's very difficult for them to understand how different life was back then.
Right. Well, I have trouble dealing with how different things are now just from when I was growing up. So I can, imagine how different things were, 150 years ago.
Yeah, the forced marches and the lack of medical supplies. Mm-hmm. And, one of the things I found out when I started asking the reenactors about reeducating was that for many in the South, it was a way of, they were protecting their way of life and states' rights. And ultimately, it was people who were trying to protect their homes.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Fayetteville and have been to the park. We took field trips. I remember going there a couple of times. And then, of course, my family, we always go to the Prairie Grove Clothesline Fair.
Uh-huh.
But I've never been to a reenactment, so it's kind of exciting.
Yes. Visitors will be directed to parking areas, and the Borden House still is a primary focus for the battle. There'll be a couple rushes up the hill. Between the mm-hmm. Union and Confederates, and a majority of the battle does take place in the valley. But visitors, if they show up, about an hour or so early, I'd encourage people to show up, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning to really experience.
To walk around and see
the camps. There'll be Sutler's Row, which is there all sorts of artifacts, authentic, clothing, musket balls, all sorts of things, recipes from and examples of the spinners and the weavers. So there's a great opportunity to find some stocking stuffers there as well as and getting involved in the hobby. This really is something that it's true that people that don't know their history are liable to repeat it. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Benton.
Thank you, Christina.
Okay.
See you Saturday.
Yep. Dr. Gregory Benton is an assistant professor in the Recreation and Sport Management Program at the University of Arkansas. He has conducted interviews with Civil War reenactors, but he also has an interest in why the public attends such events. He will be asking attendees about contacting them after the events this weekend. Battles begin at 1 o'clock both Saturday and Sunday at the Prairie Grove Battlefield. Dr. Benton suggests arriving early. This is Ozarks at Large.
Christmas music runs the gamut from sacred to silly, and you can find almost everything in between on a new benefit CD featuring musicians from several area bands. The Fayetteville Ska Alliance includes band members from A Good Fight, Six Hung Sprung, Hustles the Hall, Well, 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 and many others. Their new CD, titled Merry, Happy, Jolly Good Time, includes a few original holiday tunes and several Christmas classics, and they're all brassed up in the style of ska.
Cold on the beach, Christmas in Hawaii, or Christmas at your grandma's house. So gather up your presents and bring.
Ska developed as a musical form in Jamaica in the middle of the last century, and it's been the subject of revivals since in England in the 70s and the U.S. in the 80s and 90s. It's an energetic and rhythmic sound, a mixture of Caribbean, calypso, R&B, and whatever else you might want to add to the mix. The new CD by the Fayetteville Ska Alliance will be released Saturday night at Rogue on Dixon Street as a fundraiser for Spey, Arkansas. This week, two of the musicians behind the project, Chris Harriman and Scott Cornish, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about the new CD, about their favored charitable cause, and their year-long plan to have fun.
That was really the idea from the beginning. When we first really got into the project, I got contacted by a guy at a website who does Christmas music, and I asked him, what's the biggest trap that people making a Christmas album fall into? And he said, they try to make a Christmas album that people would want to buy. They try to just make what they would want. And he said, the way to do it is write an album that's fun. Write an album of the music that you would want to listen to and that you would want to play. And that was kind of our mindset the whole way through is, well, if we wouldn't want to listen to this, why would we record it?
So what was the process to get the songs together for the CD?
Well, I got a phone call one night last November of last year.
It was December 15th.
I thought it was still November.
It was December 15th.
Okay, well, my memory's not that good. It was last December then. I was sitting at home in Minneapolis, and I got a phone call from Chris, and he said, hey, what do you think the chances are of a ska Christmas album being popular? And I said, probably not very good. And he said, well, what if we did it? What if we wrote the music and got all the musicians that we know are high-caliber players and put this thing together? And I said, I really don't want to do a Christmas album. It's overdone. Everybody does one. None of them are really that special or unique. And I just felt like I don't want to fall into that and do the same thing that's already been done a million times. He said, just think about it. Look at some charts. Let me know if you come up with some ideas. Probably within the next 3 days, I had several ideas ready and I was on board.
I think I had 2 songs ready to go that night.
Dashing through the snow in one horse open sleigh. O'er the hills we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to laugh and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Because the Fayetteville Ska Alliance is comprised of many people with many different jobs and many different bands, getting together has been a bit of a challenge. The first rehearsal is scheduled for tonight. They'll do another Friday. Then it's the CD release performance Saturday night at Rogue.
The thing is that we've scripted everything, and the musicians that we have are quality musicians enough that I'm not really concerned about bringing these people in and doing this stuff. There's also the benefit that since we've already recorded the album once, it's kind of like a cover show where we're just covering ourselves.
Right.
Also, since we've already written all the music out, we have it there to read.
And it's good. Any idea is fun. I mean, ska is fun.
Yeah.
This concert is fun. So it's sort of a loose feeling. Not that you're not taking it seriously, but
right,
there can be a sort of holiday party feel to the event.
That, I think, is a whole lot of the idea. We schedule the whole thing. It's December 1st. I think everybody would agree that December 1st is an acceptable time to start listening to Christmas music. Personally, I think as soon as Thanksgiving dinner is over.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
As soon as the turkey's in the fridge.
Yeah. Hit the play button. That's when you deck the halls. But I think the general consensus is probably December 1st is a good way to do that.
It's a benefit for Spey, Arkansas. You don't always think of ska and spaying animals together, but this is everyone's profile. Again, going to the Fayetteville Ska Alliance webpage, everyone talks about their childhood pets, the pets they have now, and how a connection they have to animals.
Well, I think that's a real human connection. I mean, everybody, almost everybody is an animal lover. Almost everybody really has experience with animals. One of the things that we're trying to highlight with the album is that not only is it loving them, but properly taking care with them. I come from an animal shelter background, and you know, I've seen firsthand what happens when animals are overpopulated in shelters. There comes a point when every animal shelter runs out of cages, and the people in charge have to make hard decisions. The easiest way to prevent that from happening is to preemptively spay and neuter. You know, Bob Barker wasn't just running his mouth. He actually had an idea there. So that's why Spey, Arkansas is something that's really important to me, because Spey, Arkansas has been in business I think 20, 21 months now, and is going on over 6,000 surgeries. You can do the math, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
We did 56 surgeries on Monday, and a handful today.
Just before you drove down here?
Right.
From Springdale.
I'm actually the vet tech, or one of the vet techs at the Spey, Arkansas clinic in Springdale. And we were actually still doing surgeries when I left to come and do this interview.
Well, congratulations, and look forward to the show Saturday.
Appreciate it. Hope to see you there.
Chris Harriman and Scott Cornish are two members of the Fayetteville Ska Alliance. Their new CD, Merry, Happy, Jolly Good Time, will be released Saturday night with a live performance at Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. All proceeds from the CD benefit Spey, Arkansas. You can learn more about the Fayetteville Ska Alliance at the website FayettevilleSka.com. More about Spey, Arkansas at SpeyArkansas.org.
Sing praises, all you within this place, and with true love and brotherhood, each other now embrace. Oh.
More fundraising news now. Saturday from 7 a.m. until 1 p.m., the Haas Hall Academy National Honor Society will conduct a parking lot sale at the school's parking lot in Fayetteville. Money raised will be used to help the school's students create an organization called Working for the Poor to benefit efforts to ease poverty in the region. The idea developed among the school's current senior class after they were assigned David Shipler's book, The Working Poor, as a summer assignment. The book was the recent One Book, One Community selection by the University of Arkansas. Two of the organizers of Saturday's parking lot sale, Yana Kill and Justin Ramey, both seniors at Haas Hall, came to our studio yesterday. Justin says the students were inspired by something that David Shipler mentions in his book.
One of the problems he mentioned in the book was that we all know about the problem and it's mentioned in society every day, but no one takes action. And I think that was a big flag to us. We were like, well, we're sitting here talking about it, doing exactly what he says everyone does, but why don't we step out and be the first people to actually take action?
So what was the conversation like after you've made that step? Let's do something. How'd you decide what to do?
We were into a group first and we talked about the activities that we can do. And we discussed a lot of things like the actual action that we could take and how is it going to like go through, like how far do we need to like have the basics set so that we can go through with this. And we decided that it is easier for us to start with school first, to reach out to the school first and then go bigger, since it is the very first step that we're taking.
When I was in high school and we would have required reading, didn't have it during the summer, but in English or something. And often it would seem like a chore. Here comes Grapes of Wrath, and you think, oh, I don't have time. I don't want to do this. I want to watch the game on television. And then you get into it and you go, oh, this is a pretty interesting book. Have you had similar experiences like that?
Well, I did whenever I first started reading it, the first page, and I was like so confused with this book. It was talk about taxes and money, and I was like, I don't understand this stuff. But then I went through, and there are stories about personal, like stories from actual families, and there were experiences that I could actually connect to. And it really touched me, and it was really touching book, and it was the way he started out was really kind of annoying to me, but then it went more emotional towards the end, and I liked it, and it was actually a great book.
And for some people, like me, I read the book and it was interesting, but it wasn't until the class discussions that I really got involved with the book. And so now I'm going through and rereading it, and I'm seeing different things, but it was after the discussion that I really learned to like the book.
Did you happen to hear him speak when he was in Fayetteville?
Yes, sir. I went to the lecture, and I loved it. I thought, because he went in a little more depth with, like, the solutions that he kind of touched on in the book, but I really enjoyed myself hearing him talk and then just seeing him in person and everything.
See, I wasn't there to experience it personally, but our teacher was, and David Shipler actually gave our teacher an idea of an assignment that has to do with the book, and we just finished this, and it was actually family budgeting, and we went through details on groceries and insurance and everything that you have to deal with in life, and we went in depth, and we actually had to get a job, find the income, and deduct it from the income that we had, and it was really interesting how I would be doing this someday. And it was, like, so hard, too, to do. This was my first nonfiction book that I ever encountered. And I wasn't sure if I would like it very much because all this time, all my school reading was fiction, novels, great William Shakespeare, great, you know, Kate Chopin, and everyone like that. But David Shipler, when I actually first saw the book, and I was kind of wondering what the nonfiction would be like, and I started reading it. Of course, beginning I didn't like it, but the nonfiction, I kind of like it now that it's the real world that it's telling me, but it was the very first nonfiction that I ever read, and I really enjoyed it, and there's no other book like it that I read.
Yeah.
I thought for the nonfiction at first, it's different, like you said. It doesn't have all that flowery language like that fiction usually has. And so right now I'm reading Zaytoun, which is another nonfiction, and it's a little more blunt. Like, it's just kind of like, here it is, like right now dealing with society and everything. And so in that aspect, I kind of like nonfiction better because it's more like, here's the point, and then what are you going to do with it?
Zaytoun in New Orleans, right?
Yes, sir.
Taking
during
place
Katrina.
During Katrina. That's a really good book.
I'm halfway through it now. I really like it.
Justin Ramey and Yana Kill are both seniors at Haas Hall Academy and are co-organizers of the parking lot sale at Haas Hall Academy Saturday from 7 until 1. The location is 3155 North College in Fayetteville. The hours from 7 a.m. until 1 p.m. They visited the Ozarks at Large studios yesterday.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we have a name brand interview with Buddy Flett. I think of him as the Earl Cade of Shreveport, Louisiana. He stopped by the studios last month, brought a couple guitars. Check out that interview this Friday night at 9 o'clock on the Generic Blues Show. We'll see you then.
It is Thursday, November 29th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Jody Beznoska. She's Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Good holiday?
Yes, wonderful holiday. How about you guys?
It was good. Yeah, busy.
Yeah, went to my in-laws in Kentucky. It was a great time, great food, very mellow.
Yeah, mellow. I heard a lot of mellow from people this year. I think we needed mellow.
The Arts Center was dark for a few days. You had the special Cyber Monday sale, but the stage is about to get lit up again.
Yes, tonight.
Tonight,
actually. And what a, you know, it's almost December, only a couple days away from December.
Saturday.
And I would say it is officially holiday Christmas season
now. Oh, yeah,
now.
I think we can say that.
We can say that. And tonight, I think, is going to be one of those little gem kind of performances that I'm not sure people know quite what to expect, but I think it's going to be really remarkable. I was doing some research last night because we have a creative conversation this evening, and this is with Contus, which is a very, very well-known and famous a cappella group, and
I would say one of the most famous in the world.
Yeah, they're I can't wait. I'm going to get to meet some of them, and I can't wait to talk to them.
Where are they from?
So excited.
Do we know?
I'm not sure, actually.
I don't know either. Perhaps by the end of this interview, I will have done some research and found out.
Okay. So Contus is collaborating with a company called Theater Latte Da, and I actually know where they're from.
Okay.
They're from Minnesota. And the show is called All is Calm, the Christmas Truce of 1914. And it's based on that moment in history when the German and the Allied forces decided we're sort of fed up with the fighting that's going on, and they sang songs and exchanged gifts and celebrated Christmas together in no man's land. And then, you know, later they went back to fighting. But it's been really interesting to learn a little bit more about the history of that event and how it happened. And we'll hear a little bit. I'm sure we'll learn about that tonight at the show. But it sounds like it's going to be just – it's going to be familiar songs, Christmas songs that you know, but it's set to a story about these soldiers. And I learned that the words that you're going to hear spoken in one way or the other are actual words. So they're taken from letters and radio interviews and all kinds of real – so it's not a fictionalized play. Mm-hmm. It's a collaboration between these two groups that weaves actual songs together with real words. It's neat, and I think it's going to kick the season off on a very, very nice note. And plus, you'll get to hear Contus, for
right.
heaven's sakes.
Wow. Who I think are from Minneapolis, based in Minneapolis.
Oh, another Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Well, okay. That would make sense as to why they collaborated.
It would.
Okay, good.
That's tonight. It's one night only.
It's 10 by 10. It is
10
by 10, so tickets are $10. The show starts at 7 p.m., and then there will be a creative conversation with one of the singers and one of the actors. I'll actually be leading that at 6 o'clock. So that's free and open to anybody who wants to join. So that's tonight. And then 2 days from now, on Saturday, we'll have the third show in our Starlight Jazz series, the Sean Jones Quartet.
He was on the show just yesterday.
Yeah, he's going to be fun. He is a trumpeter, and his shows are 7 and 9 p.m., and that's, again, in Star Theater, so that seating is very intimate. And the tickets are very affordable for that, so a good one to come out for. Then, of course, next week we'll have Billy Elliot.
Right.
The musical.
Starts Tuesday.
Exciting. Starts Tuesday. 8 performances. Lots of tickets left for that, so get them if you want. Going to be a really good, you know, I think we tend to think that Billy Elliot is a really serious show, and it does have some serious themes, but it's really, really beautiful and really uplifting. Like, and Christina is the one of the three of us that has seen
right.
it.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, yeah. Yes, totally.
So yeah, there's some hard stuff in there, but you're going to want to get up on stage and dance yeah. with the music.
But you can't.
You
right?
can't. No,
okay.
No. Unfortunately, you might get okay. in trouble if you try
okay.
that. So it runs from Tuesday through Sunday, the 4th through the 9th, 8 performances. At that same time, Theater Squared is opening their holiday show,
right.
Tennessee Williams' Period of Adjustment. And then the following week, we will begin what I think we could call the Christmas Gauntlet at Walton Arts Center. We will, on the 11th, we will have two shows of Mannheim Steamroller, their Christmas show, a 4 o'clock and a 7:30. That's been a really popular show for us. And that one, if you wait till the last minute, you might have trouble getting tickets. On the 15th, which is a Saturday at 7:30, Sona will be doing their Christmas concert. Mm-hmm. Wonderful sort of celebration of sacred and popular music. And on Sunday the 16th, we will have Winona's Rockin' Christmas. That's a 7 p.m. show. On the 17th, which is Monday, we'll have Jim Brickman and his show On a Winter's Night. He plays the piano. That's a 7 o'clock show. Then a couple days off, whew, and then we will have on the 20th, which is Thursday, the Preservation Hall Jazz Band Creole Christmas.
I will be there,
most definitely.
For that.
And then one last one, the Nutcracker, will be from the 21st through the 23rd, 4 performances. So yeah, lots of different holiday Christmas stuff that you could come to. I'm pretty much sure there's something for everybody in that mix.
I think so.
And then we will go dark for Christmas a little bit. Of course, Theater Squared will be running their show over
through the
30th of December. And then we will come back right after the holiday with Catch Me If You Can, which will be the next show on our Broadway series. So much fun. This is, I will bet you a lot of people will go, what is that? Have I heard of that? You probably have. It was the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks. It's a chase story. It's a con man story. You know, Frank Abagnale was a real person who basically conned the world into thinking he was a lawyer, a doctor, a pilot, various things. And he ran these crazy cons all over the country. He got caught and he's reformed himself. And now his story has become a movie, and it's also become a song and dance musical.
So the moral of the story is be a con man, and you can eventually
have a Broadway play.
Exactly.
Be very charming.
Right.
And repentant
right.
When,
right.
after you get caught.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's going to be great. So that's January 8th through the 13th. And I don't think I can handle thinking any further.
Okay, let's not.
Right.
Let's not.
And for any information about any of this,
waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600, or come down and visit us at the box office.
Thank you, Jody.
You're welcome.
Jody Beznoska is Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of novelist Madeline Lengo, born in New York City in 1918. She was an actor, she wrote a novel, and then while she was in her 30s, she read a book that deeply affected her, a book of Einstein's, in which he said that anyone who's not lost in rapturous awe at the power and glory of the mind behind the universe is as good as a burnt-out candle. So she started reading about theoretical physics, and she wrote a science fiction novel for young adults, which was rejected by 26 publishers, some because they thought it was too hard for children. Others thought that a science fiction novel should not have a female as a main character. So she gave up on the book until one of her mother's old friends came to a tea party and told Madeline Lengel that she was in a writing group with John Ferrer of the publishing house Ferrer, Straus, and Giroux. And he looked at the manuscript, decided to publish it, and her book, A Wrinkle in Time, came out in 1963, won the Newbery Medal, and has gone on to sell more than 10 million copies. It's the birthday of C.S. Lewis, Clive Staples Lewis, born in Belfast, 1898, grew up in a house full of books, got a scholarship to Oxford, and though he did not like England and thought that English accents sounded strange. He did Lovett at Oxford and taught there for nearly 30 years. He had been an atheist, but his friend J.R.R. Tolkien, who also taught at Oxford, helped convince him to embrace Christianity. And C.S. Lewis went on to write books, classics of Christian apologetics, including the Screwtape Letters, Mere Christianity, and also his fantasy series, The Chronicles of Narnia. And it's the birthday of Louisa May Alcott, born Germantown, Pennsylvania, 1832, grew up in Concord, family was friends with Emerson and Hawthorne and Thoreau. Her father, Bronson Alcott, was an idealist, a vegan, started experimental schools that quickly failed. The family never had enough money. Louisa became a nurse in Washington during the Civil War. She contracted typhoid pneumonia, came back to Concord. And though she preferred writing lurid and sensationalist potboiler novels, to support her family, she set out to write a book for girls. She wrote Little Women. It came out in 1868, was an immediate hit, and her family was able to live comfortably from then on. Here's a poem for today by Pat Mara, entitled Teenagers. One day they disappear into their rooms, doors and lips shut, and we become strangers in our own home. I pace the hall, hear whispers, a code I knew but can't remember, mouthed by mouths I taught to speak. Years later, the door opens. I see faces I once held open as sunflowers in my hands. I see familiar skin now stretched on long bodies that move past me, glowing almost like pearls. Teenagers, a poem by Pat Mara from her collection Communion, published by Arte Publico Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from the New Design School, hosting its Mayan Gala Thursday, December 6th at BHK on the Square in Fayetteville. This event will feature student works, Mayan-inspired food and music, plus local merchandise. Proceeds benefit student scholarships. NewDesignSchool.org for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Pea Ridge.
Pea Ridge. Very good. North Benton County. We have four movie passes and a Tim Ernst 2013 calendar to give away. Beautiful new edition of the Tim Ernst calendar. You have a question.
I do have a question. So earlier in the show, we talked, I had an interview about the Prairie Grove battlefield.
Yes.
And the Prairie Grove battle, the reenactment that's this weekend. So 150 years ago on December 7th, there are various buildings on the battlefield. If you've ever been out there, there's the Latta Barn, the Latta House, the Borden House, the Morrow House. How many of those buildings were actually there 150 years ago?
So how many of the buildings that are on the Prairie Grove battlefield campus
right now.
Actually were in that spot
150 years ago?
And it's an exact number?
It is.
Okay, well, send your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Yes.
And you will receive a Tim Ernst calendar and four movie passes, good for any Malco movie theater in the area. Okay. How many of those buildings? I like that.
Right. Should we ask what the name of the building was?
Too hard. I tell you what, if you know the name of the building and we pick your name out of the ceramic cow, we'll give you six movie passes instead of four.
Sounds good.
It's a bonus. Did you stand in line at all for lottery tickets last night?
No.
Well, I bought two, and I am still at work. Don't can't be unemployed yet.
Yeah.
Not that I would be if I won. I'd be one of those people. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'll be back tomorrow. You and I will be back Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful, warm Thursday.
Happy Thursday.